One of the events that ushered in the modern civil rights era was the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955. But only 5 months later, a similar movement began in Tallahassee, one that resulted in profound changes in Florida's capital city. In the spring of 2006, I talked to the author of a forthcoming book to get a perspective on the movement and its extraordinary leader.
You never knew what might happen in the course of a night. You never know what's going to happen. You live with apprehension all the time.
Reverend Henry Marion Steele, remembering the turbulent days of the Tallahassee bus boycott of 1956, when his father, the Reverend Charles Kinsey Steele, was at the very center of a bitter struggle against segregation.
But we were in a mass meeting across town, and word came to us that a cross had been placed out in front of our home and church. A neighbor helped my mother put the fire out, who also said that she saw policemen placed the cross in the yard and set it ablaze.
It all began on May 26th when two Florida A&M students, Wilhelmina Jakes and Carrie Patterson, refused to give up their seats on a Tallahassee City bus to white passengers. Rather than refund their dime fare, the bus driver called the police, and the two women were arrested, charged with inciting a riot. The following night, a cross was burned in their front yard after the local paper, the Tallahassee Democrat, published their home address. Two nights later, 500 members of the black community attended a meeting led by the Reverend C.K. Steele. To avoid charges of outside agitation, a local group, the Inner City Council, was formed. The bus boycott was underway.
Black patronage comprised 60% of the bus company's total revenue. So when blacks stopped riding the bus, they simply couldn't operate.
Eckerd College historian Greg Padgett is writing a book on the boycott. On July 1st, the city's buses ceased operations, beginning a troubled time in which carpools were organized only to be harassed by police. Bus services were reinstated, then suspended again by order of the governor, and both black and white communities were deeply divided. Throughout the turmoil, C.K. Steele stood firm.
A lot of it spun around his personality. I've been off and on researching C.K. since I was a young graduate student back in the 70s. And in all that time, foe and friend, none have ever had anything negative to say about him. I can't think of anyone else who has that kind of role.
For more than a year, the city's blacks battled a system that used every conceivable means to defeat their cause, legal and illegal. Virtually the entire white establishment was arrayed against them, according to Mike Pope, longtime reporter for the Tallahassee Democrat.
The establishment in Tallahassee was virulently racist, good old boys sort of network. The Tallahassee City Commission, the Tallahassee Police Department, and the Tallahassee Democrat, which gave it publicity and advocated its cause. Also, the Tallahassee business community that canceled insurance policies or wouldn't give a loan, or, you know, there's a whole network of things that one could do in the business community.
But much of the intimidation and violence was directed at Steele and his family. Henry Steele remembers rocks being thrown through the windows of the family home.
The first time it hit, I hit the floor and was under the bed. I hadn't thought about what or why. My brother upstairs, glass shattered all over him. And my mother called all of us into the center of the house. And my father looking out at them with the Smith and Wesson trying to decide if they tried to come in, would he shoot? They did that often. And then they began to shoot in the house. The telephone rang constantly. Sometimes the callers would say nothing. Sometimes obscene things. Finally, we had to move out of the house.
I had this conversation with him. I says, all the things that you went through, I know your life was threatened. I know that there was a point where there was actually a contract on your life. How did you feel about that? He says, you'll understand one day. All of us had the sense that our lives were not our own. Our lives belonged to God. And it was God's choice about what happened. And once you assume that belief, then it's liberating. You don't worry about death.
But by the beginning of 1958, Tallahassee's buses were integrated, quietly and with a lack of publicity. It was the end of a movement that once again proved the power of a community organized by a fearless and idealistic individual.
Ministers very often provided the only real solid substantive leadership that there was in the community, because they were in charge of the one institution over which black folks had complete control, and that was the church. There were a lot of civil rights movement. Throw a rock, there was one in every community, practically. What was different about Steele and different about what happened in Tallahassee he managed to hold the community together, and he managed to help the community heal. You know, there were a lot of bad blood, you know, a lot of animosity. Somehow, given his ability to communicate with people, he helped that community heal.
Reverend Steele really kind of calmed all of us down. You know, it was just people wasn't going to take some of this stuff.
In a 1994 interview, activist Laura Dixie remembered the man and his effect on the community.
But he could just calm me down, and he said, now, why would you want to fight? See, that's not going to resolve anything. And, you know, I really thought about this thing. I said, you know, he's just so right. If you're going to get out there and join the enemies, you are not any better. And, you know, he really taught a lot of us. He was quite a man. I'm telling you, he was quite a man.
After the boycott, C.K. Steele continued to champion civil rights causes until his death of cancer in 1980. I'm Bill Dudley. With funding from the Florida Department of State Division of Cultural Affairs, this report was produced by the Florida Humanities Council. Visit us on the web at flahum.org.